T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, guy.
I'm a guy.
Yeah.
Wait. Start the show now. Oh, don't do it over, but let's just, that first sentence, let's have that not count in this show.
Which one?
I don't know. That just seems like we've never done that. We've never cut out a show for no reason and then just kept going.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, just read the script.
Yeah, that's okay. What I am doing.
Don't mind, Tony.
Okay, and that delightful voice you heard over there chiming in, that is Will Schmidt, fitness trainer to the stars.
To the stars, woo woo.
Mm-hmm, fancy pants. Yeah.
So, now that we're fancy, today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
It's going to be 150,001 in a few weeks.
Nice.
So that they're working on, we have a production company doing Kick Your Fat in the Nuts audiobook.
Wow.
Awesome.
So
I was going to ask if we could read that.
Yeah, yeah.
Kenna could do all our voices.
Yeah, what? Yeah. Well, how come I wasn't asked? What the hell? Yeah, you're actually going to pay somebody to do it and you're not asking me?
Exactly. They offer.
I'm done. I quit.
Bye-bye. Oh, that was a dial tone. No, we got a guy to do it and he sounds like me.
Oh, so you're a sexist.
Yes. Okay. I'm one of those things. But I heard the first few chapters, and it's awesome. It's going to be fun. It's going to be kind of cool to have an audio book where, because a lot of people like read the book again, like, oh my gosh, I learned everything. I didn't see any of that the first time.
Yeah.
So now if you can listen to it, then all of a sudden, hey, I picked up half that stuff I missed.
Yeah, I listened to it when I first, I guess not read it, but listened to it before I've ever read it. I used this thing called Ghost Reader.
Yeah, I tried using that. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know how I figured it out because I couldn't do it again, but it was awesome because it was like this really like robot voice that did not have proper syntax, and hearing your jokes in robot voice was just the best.
Right.
So probably I hope made them funny.
That probably made it work.
Yeah, throwing off the cadence and it was great.
Anyway. I'm going to just wait till it comes out in a movie. Oh, yeah. It is.
Oh, speaking of movie, that's very important. You did good, Kenna, bringing that up. So by the time this comes out, we're going to be doing our Kickstarter to raise the funds for our post-production stuff because we're in editing and the movie's wrapping up and we have some final costs for production and distribution. So if you listen to this, go to kickitinthenuts.com/movie and we'll point you to where you can find our Kickstarter campaign and make a donation because we'll have a bunch of great perks. You guys can get some good stuff by making donations. Do it!
Awesome.
Cool. All right. So today we are going to be talking about calorie fiction and confusion about calories. You know, there's that old calories in, calories out stuff.
Yes, it makes me violent.
Yeah, oh, good.
It makes me violent when people say that. It makes me want to cause damage.
Well, but before Tony gets violent, if you're not part of the Facebook group, then you need to pull over, drop anything you're doing, stop writing that letter asking Tony to make me the voice of his books, and go ahead and join Kick It in the Nuts on Facebook, and that's where we're going to post all the future shows we'll be doing, and you guys can ask any questions you want us to cover on that show, and we'll try to cover it.
That's what we'll do.
Chances are we will. We may not have an answer, but we'll read your question.
And we may make fun of your name
and
or where you're from.
And we may make fun of you.
That's
definitely.
Okay. So calories, and there's just so much confusion about this that I kind of wanted to do a show to talk about where the confusion is and how to straighten some people out and help them avoid wasting time and creating so much frustration and thinking, oh, I just can't lose weight and I must be broken, because that's kind of what people think when they do. I'm gonna count my calories and it doesn't work, and then they get frustrated. So we're gonna talk about the ins and outs and why it's there's a lot of BS about it, and explain the parts that are true, and that's what we'll do. Ready, go.
Crickets.
Why don't we just start with, why don't we go into the first question, and then we'll talk about a little bit more stuff.
All right, Melissa from Hanford, California. I work out about 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Whoa. I've been limiting my calories to about 1,300 a day and limiting the carbs to just a couple of days a week. I'm trying to lose fat and build lean muscle, but I'm not seeing any results. I've been told I need to eat more. What's your opinion? Eat more. Yeah, eat more.
So, Melissa, I'd like you to adjust your workout a little bit, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to find the person that told you that this scenario that you're doing was a good idea. And I want you to punch them in the face for about 45 minutes. And then once you're done punching them in the face.
15 minutes left, she can do cardio after that.
No, I want her to just take it easy after that. Okay. Just rest
walk lightly
after that 45 minutes of punching this person in the face, period. Because someone has guided you horribly, horribly wrong. And I don't know if it was a magazine you read to do this or if you just thought, well, it makes sense since I just need to burn more calories than I'm eating. I might as well do it for hours at a time. But one thing that you could do that would help a lot would be to just stop it. Will, do you want to explain why we want to just stop doing that?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely more than you need to lose weight, and it gets counterproductive once you start really overtraining. You start losing a lot of muscle mass and damaging your metabolism or weakening your metabolism because your body just really can't handle, especially if you're doing anything even moderately intense for like 3 hours like that and you're not seeing results. First of all, like, you shouldn't keep doing it just because you're not seeing results, but that much overtraining with that severe calorie restriction is going to really convince your body that it's starving and it doesn't have anywhere near the amount of resources it needs to maintain adequate muscle mass and keep you alive. So it's going to cause you to lose a lot of muscle mass, which will lower your overall metabolism. And it'll also really tell your body to hang on to what little fat reserves it has as best it can because it's starving and needs those fats in case like you just run out of food entirely, because you're creating what seems like a famine to your body with that calorie deficit.
Right, and the body needs fats for a lot of functions. They're required. If you don't have them, you don't function as a human being. So when you're using all of these resources and burning all of this fuel, so to speak, but you're not taking in any fuel, the body is going to get very defensive, very stressed. It's going to freak out a little bit, and it's going to say, okay, I got to hold on to everything I have. I'm going to keep this fat in reserve because obviously we're not getting any resources at all. There must be a drought or something that's restricting fuel food intake. So we're going to hold on to all the fat that we have. So for fuel, we're going to break down muscle, and we're going to use that as fuel so that we can hold on to this fat, which it considers as gold in the bank. It's like money in the bank, this stored fat. So
I'm rich.
Yeah, way
oh,
to go.
Yeah.
Write a check. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important to help your body feel like everything's okay, because when you are leaning out and your body is letting go of fat, it's doing so because everything's good. The world is a happy place. And the body feels like, okay, I'm getting everything I need. I don't need to hold on to these emergency reserves because I don't feel like I'm in an emergency situation. And working out for 3 hours a day and eating as much as, I would say a large bird. Not like anything bigger than a bird, but it would be a large bird would probably eat that amount of calories. Is going to create a situation where the body's going to freak out and say, I can't do this. It's like trying to pay $800 worth of bills with 12 bucks.
Yeah. And it's good to know that your body considers muscle as an expense because it takes a lot of energy just to keep muscle mass around.
Right.
It's like an expensive girlfriend. Like you just have to pay money just for them to be there. So if you're just sitting on the couch and you have a lot of muscle, you're going to burn through a lot of energy and resources. There is some estimate, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but something like 50 calories a day is what it takes to keep 1 pound of lean tissue muscle mass. present and just functional. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it just goes to the direction of knowing, like, the more muscle you have, the more energy your body is going to be burning just to exist, which is why a lot of, like, bodybuilders who have a ton of muscle mass barely do any cardio and have really, really low body fat, because just sleeping, they're burning way more fat than this person 3 hours on a treadmill.
Right, so it kind of makes sense that why the body would break down muscle before it would break down fat in this emergency type deficit situation, because the body would benefit not only from keeping its emergency reserves of fat stored, but by breaking down this muscle tissue and using that, not only does it get the fuel it needs, but it's also reducing the amount of fuel that is required by holding that muscle mass around. So the good news for you, Melissa, is that you're not broken. You're not, it's not a problem where I just can't lose weight. What is wrong with me? It's a problem of I'm just listening to horrible advice. And it happens to be horrible advice that is rampant in the media and in the mainstream. So don't feel like that, you know, you're dumb because you were doing this. This is just the information that's out there. And what's amazing is, you know, when we traveled the country filming the Why Am I So Fat documentary, and we talked to a lot of the biggest names that deal with all the celebrities, and they're all the best-selling authors in weight loss and nutrition. And not one of them said, oh, I have my clients count their calories and burn more calories than they eat. Not a single one said that, because everybody just knows that that doesn't work anymore. The problem is that information takes 20 years to catch up.
Except for that guy that had his own plane.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's right. We did. We did interview a guy that was very big on the calories. I did. I forgot about him. But he is not an expert or a best-selling author or work with any type of celebrities or successful clients or any of that kind of stuff. Just a guy with an opinion. So that's why this opinion is so out there, is because this was believed 20 years ago. We don't believe this anymore, and we'll spend the rest of the show kind of explaining and teaching why, so that you don't have to waste time doing it.
Yeah, I mean, because even now, like, if you watch The Biggest Loser, they spend hours working out a day, and it's like they're just defeating the purpose at a certain point. And that's why when they all get to their goal weight, they all look so shrunken and skinny and drawn and old and like a raisin. Because they lost it so fast, and they not only lost fat, but they lost a lot of their muscle mass, too.
Yeah, and keep in mind that what the goal of that show is, to be the one to lose the most weight.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're working out like Melissa is and eating so restrictive like that, like they do on a lot of weight loss shows, you are losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that is muscle and water and all this other stuff that your body needs. So as soon as you leave the show and you have one sandwich, you gain 80 pounds back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have a guy in our movie that was on a show just like that and lost 80 pounds and gained 60 of it back as soon as he left. And what a great guy. We liked him a lot, too. You'll see him in the movie. But it's losing weight the wrong way. It's working against your body, and you're losing the wrong kind of weight when you're creating such a deficit like that.
Mm-hmm. Make it easier. Madeline from Toluca Lake, California. What is the percentage of people who see results when they count calories?
8.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But I think a good way to look at this is that let's look at the good side of counting calories, because there has to be a benefit or so many people wouldn't have had success doing it. And that's where a lot of the other confusion comes in, is because a person will say, well, my friend counted calories and lost 60 pounds, and so it must work. So the first thing that happens when you count calories is that you have to count calories. So you have to be awake and conscious of what you're actually shoving in your gullet. And you start to pay attention. Oh, I didn't realize I had 3 Kit Kat bars every night before I went to bed.
So that would be the one good thing about counting calories, is you become aware of what you're putting in
right.
your mouth.
And it's huge, and it's very beneficial.
And you can do it with a food journal.
Right. A lot of people will see huge success just by journaling what they're eating, whether they're counting calories or not. just write it down so that you have to look at it every day, whether anybody else is looking at it and screaming at you about it or not. But, you know, just the act of writing it down and looking at it makes you realize how much you're eating and how much of that is, oh, I guess that's not real food.
Yeah.
I guess I can't count squirt cheese as nutrition.
Right. And I think it makes people a little bit more self-conscious and face the facts, like, well, they really have to put down 3 donuts or whatever it was. I didn't realize that I ate 8 bags of chips.
Right.
But I kind of did over that hour.
And another thing, when you're writing it or you're tracking and any kind of stuff like that, you know that you're going to do those calculations at some time of the day. So when you go to eat a box of donuts, you have to have that thought of, do I want to mark this in my journal, or do I want to add these calories on my calorie counter wizard app?
Or do they count if they're someone else's donuts?
Yeah.
Can they just be omitted?
Yeah. If I didn't buy them, right, do I really have to make them count?
Right.
I think one of my favorite quotes is that your body keeps an accurate journal no matter what you write down.
Right.
So that's a huge benefit for counting calories, because a lot of the junk that people eat has a higher caloric value. So when people look to reduce their calories, they look at what they're eating and they're like, okay, Jack in the Box has 2,000 calories in that meal. I might have to eat less Jack in the Box because this chicken and broccoli, you know, that's like 80 calories or something, you know. So they start to look at things like that and they find that real food has a lower caloric value than a lot of the junk that is not viewed by the body as food that they were eating. So they start to switch more to a real food situation, which is always going to be beneficial. So those are the real benefits in counting calories. First of all, is just being aware of what you're eating is one of the biggest things you can do. And the second thing is that if you're trying to reduce the number of calories, that it's likely that you're moving towards more real food. And I think a lot of people will do these 100-calorie snack pack things, and it's just junk food that's low in calories. And those are a lot of the people that say, I'm only having 1,300 calories, but I'm not losing any weight. And we don't know what Melissa's doing at all, but that may be part of her formula. She may be eating a lot of stuff that the body's like, yeah, that's not food.
And when you do calories, like when I did Weight Watchers and stuff, you automatically start to switch to real food, because then you can get more calories or points out of it.
Unless you're in college.
Well, then you're doing the lean cuisines, you're doing all those, you're in the meals and stuff, or saving up for one big cheese.
Right, exactly.
Eating lettuce all day. Okay, I did that too.
Yeah.
But generally, after a while, you taper out and you go, okay, I'm going to get more for my buck if I just eat something that's lower in caloric.
Because you're starving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lived with in a house with 9 people in England during college, and 6 of them, 5 of them were girls, and they all did Weight Watchers, and they would just starve all day, and then they'd go to the movies at night and get popcorn and jujubes and soda.
And their points and their flex points
and
in one day.
Yeah, they all got sick, they all gained fat, they all had energy problems, and it was a mess.
Right. So before we go on to the next question, let's just talk for a second about the downside of counting calories and why this is not the route to go. And the first thing to understand is that there are laws of physics and everything in place that people talk about, and they get real upset with you when you say that it's not true and all that kind of stuff. But it is true that, you know, a calorie is burned, and there's laws that happen when that's going on, and that's true in the lab. And everything that they're saying is 100% true when you're doing those calculations in a lab and a petri dish and a calorimeter. And a calorimeter is basically a tool that you use that you put a food in this little box. And sometimes it's a big oven. Sometimes it has a flame. There's different kinds. But you basically put food in a chamber and then you burn it. And then the outside chamber has water. And according to how many degrees that water goes up, that's how many calories are in that food, and that's what it's going to take your body to burn that food. The problem is, where in the human body is there a flame?
Oh. Never mind.
Yeah, not that a person is flamboyant. A person can be flamboyant but not have a flame. That's a different thing. You were getting confused. So it's this whole formula is so far from human physiology that it's a little bit of a joke. And the reality, and it all makes sense when we realize that, okay, the human body does not function like a calorimeter does. It does not function like a Petri dish. It has all this other stuff and all these other factors that need to be weighed in before you know how many calories it's going to take that body to burn in order to do that amount of exercise. So when you eat 2,000 calories, but you exercise and burn 2,000 calories, that doesn't mean that your body didn't have all kinds of other stuff going on that day that was either causing the body to need more resources than just those 2,000 calories, or to cause the body to be defensive and to hold on to resources. Another huge problem is you ate 2,000 calories, but what did you eat? And was your body even able to process that?
Yeah.
And like, use it?
Yeah. Like, how many calories does a 4-ounce piece of chicken count for if you don't digest any of it?
Yeah, if you can't break it down into elemental nutrients that your body can use, then can your body really burn any of that?
Yeah. No.
So the answer is no.
No.
So when you can't digest it, which is very, very common, if you've never heard our show before, we Kenna won't even let us shut up about digestion at all. She gets very excited about it.
But
it creates... I have Tony read from his book every night, so I'll go to school.
So it causes so many problems when you can't digest what you're eating, and it's a very common problem. So when you can't break food into the nutrients and amino acids and minerals and vitamins, all those things that your body needs, instead of it being nutrition, now it's a problem that your body has to deal with.
Yeah, and so we want to look at, like, what are the causes of your body retaining fat? And it's not excess calories. It's all sorts of things, right? Like starvation mode, toxins. Your body will put fat, or you'll use fat as, like, a little storehouse for garbage, like plastics and phthalates and things like that.
And toxins and things that you ate that... You know, when you eat something and you can't digest it, now it starts to rot and ferment, which creates chemicals. And that food, that even if it could have been healthy food, sure, can become a toxin to the body because now the body has to find a way to get rid of that.
Yeah, or sugar.
Oh, yeah. Everybody always looks at me, right, on that one.
If your body,
you're sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
You know, if you have too much sugar at a time when your body really doesn't need it, like even if it was only like 300 calories of carbs for the day, like if they were the wrong kind at the wrong type... you got what I say. Mm-hmm. Your body will store it as fat if it doesn't really need to use it as fuel or put it in muscles. So we got to look at all sorts of factors of how are you digesting things, the timing of your meals, your exercise level, your menstrual cycle, your body temp, all sorts of factors that go into like affecting whether you gain or lose weight and whether you gain or lose fat as opposed to muscle or bone mass even.
Right. So all those factors are important. Now let's just step back for a second and pretend that we're debating ourselves and look at the positive view of the other side. And because the caloric value of a food can be a possible factor when you're looking at, is the body going to store this as for later fuel or not? It can be a possible factor when you consume extreme excess amounts of calorie or even fuel of any kind. No matter what you eat, if you eat in excess, that can spike insulin levels just like eating a lot of sugar would. And we talk about in our books and courses how keeping insulin high is a great way to force your body into storing fat almost all the time and restricting its ability to burn fat for fuel. So excessive calories, just like excessive fuel, can have an effect on insulin levels as well. Therefore, a calorie can be a factor. The problem is that most people are walking around with this belief that by just calculating the calories that I take in and calculating the calories that I burn according to my pedometer and some metal handle that I hold onto on the treadmill, is going to tell me the exact calculation I need to fit into my skinny jeans. And it's absolute friction.
Yeah. Even if you use super fancy tools, like I remember when I used to work for this particular gym, they would do this 10-minute long analysis of your CO2 and O2 levels. I would say like, oh, your resting metabolic rate is exactly this. So they would create these low calorie diets and women would be on them and drinking Diet Cokes and avoiding the calories and all that stuff and gaining fat and feeling weak and tired and awful. But even though it was precise of exactly what their resting metabolic rate was and they're measuring how many calories they're burning exercise, it didn't matter because the signals they were sending their body were telling them to like lose muscle, store fat, and had a lot to do with what they were and were not able to digest and, you know, other toxic fats that were in there.
Right. And keep in mind, we know that when insulin levels are very high that the body can't access stored fat for fuel because the high insulin is telling the body that glucose is here. We want to use that first. So if your insulin levels are at a high level to the point where you're blocking your body's ability to access stored fat, and yet you're restricting calories to try to create this deficit so your body burns fat, you can understand that that's going to be unsuccessful pretty much no matter what. In that scenario, your body, again, is going to break down tissue before it's going to access any stored fat. So even if you lose weight, you're not going to lose gushiness.
Right. Which is one of the most deceptive gushiness.
Gushiness is a sciencey factor, word. Yeah.
A more effective thing to maybe watch is instead of even measurements or the scale is calipers where you can pinch like skin folds and see like, are you actually losing fat and getting leaner in that way? But this is also one of the deceptive things that people experience when they do like juice cleanses or fasts like that, where they'll lose a ton of weight in a week or two on a juice cleanse. But the whole time they're messing up their insulin response and make their body more insulin resistant and just avoiding their digestive weaknesses. So when they get off these juice cleanses, their metabolism's even worse off than it was before and their digestion's usually weaker than it was before. So of course they gain back more fat and they've lost muscle in the meantime. So the metabolism's even slower as a result.
Right. And the blender was $400.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sad.
So before we go to questions again, because I totally forgot that we even had questions, we kind of went on blabbing. Kind of like left the room for a while.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Uh-huh.
She went and like mowed the lawn. But an important thing that needs to be considered as well is that your body does all of these other things, all of these other maintenance functions that it has to take place. So when you're trying to create this calorie deficit, your body gets into a panic and it says, okay, well, I'm going to put maintenance and repair and all these things that are crucial. I'm going to put those on hold until this famine is over. Because times are hard, you know, you only do maintenance and repair work when everything is okay. Like when your in-laws are visiting for the weekend, you don't clean out your attic. You do that later when you don't have the stress of people visiting. So not only are you not losing weight by just making a deficit, you're forcing your body into not taking care of business.
Mm.
So here's the thing that you can look at in your calorie counting efforts is I kind of believe that counting calories could work and you could get it right down to the exact number of what you needed if your digestion was working perfectly, nothing that you ate contained any type of toxin whatsoever, and you were able to fully break it down into nutrients that could be used by the body. You were eating things that were keeping your insulin levels at a low enough rate, and you knew exactly what maintenance functions your body was performing at any time and how many resources you needed for that function, so you could alter the amount of calorie intake that you took to help your body in that time of need when it needs more resources. Sure.
Plus how hot it was and how much you were exposed to.
The temperature, body temperature.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then what was your diet like before? Like if your insulin levels were higher, you'd naturally maybe lose fat even if you kept the same number of calories.
Right. You would also need to calculate the amount of chlorine and fluoride in your shower that was getting into your system while you showered.
Right.
Have you self-test?
Yeah. Self-test all this stuff.
No.
Yeah. So all of these things
it's
are factors.
5 hours a day to self-test.
So that's
myself.
It? We can create an app for that.
Yeah. Yeah, we got an app for that. So all of these things and about 20 more that we haven't even mentioned that we may mention later in the show are
and
all
if you
factors.
Get stressed, and if you have your period.
Right.
And, you
and
might
the period
have
is a
baby,
huge one.
Right.
And if you have a boss like Tony.
Right. All these stressful things. are things that have to be factored into this calorie in, calorie out formula. But the only information out there to people that are telling Melissa is just count these calories and the ones that you burn and you're golden.
Hmm.
And that's why people get so frustrated and think, well, I guess I just can't lose weight.
Melissa's like, geez, I'm sorry I put in my question.
No, it's not even Melissa's fault.
Yeah. We should do one podcast per question.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the reality is that Melissa's using information that 70% of the country is using.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same information that is...
Yeah, my mom does it, and she does 1,200 calories. I'm like, Mom, you're starving yourself, and she just doesn't want to listen to me. So maybe now, because she's can I'll never read that book. Maybe now that it's going to be, you know, she can listen to it. Maybe I can stick it in her car and just have it go. And oh, what's this? You know,
uh-huh.
It's not religious music, but I'll listen.
I guess we'll cover another question.
Moving on.
Okay. Amber from Clare, Michigan. If I'm not counting calories, how do I know how much fuel to put in my body? I work out hard and heavy, which makes me extremely hungry. How do I find balance? And then Aaron answers Amber. Amber, what are your goals? Add bulk, tone, lose fat, build endurance, maintain? Your exact goals could necessarily influence optimal caloric intake and macronutrient composition. But assuming you already have the optimal macronutrient balance and you're just looking for guidance on keeping things in check without actually counting calories, then try the hand measurement method, palm of this, fist of that, etc. However, to find optimal foods intake to keep an absolute equilibrium between input and output is always an inexact science. Tony may have better methods. That's just one that can simplify the measurement part.
Yeah, I like what Aaron's saying here, and I really like the hand measurement. Mm-hmm. And the one that I like the most and that I tell clients to use that's so simple is the one I got from Bill Phillips, which is protein should be about the size of your palm in size and even thickness, and the vegetables should be the size of your whole hand open.
Oh, good. I have really fat, thick, and big palms.
Right, so you can have a filet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you get the filet.
Every day.
So I like looking at that measurement. And, you know, as far as understanding how do I know how much should I eat, well, if you work out extremely hard and intense and you're starving and ravenous, you know that either, A, you're not eating enough, or B, you're not processing the foods that you are eating, so your body's screaming for more.
Then maybe you should eat something before, too, like a shake or something, some protein or something before you work out.
It's a possibility, depending on what time of day that she's working out. But in any case, you know, if you get to that point where you're extremely, like, this was all capital letters.
Yeah.
Extremely.
She was
yelling at us.
Screaming at us.
Simmer down, Amber. You're stressing yourself out, and that's going to make you gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when your body is that hungry, that's a great tool to use as a judge of, am I eating the right amount of food? Because you're not.
Yeah. In general, like, when you're losing fat, like, you shouldn't be hungry. Like, that's been my experience. Like, if I let myself get hungry, I'll see muscles will start to get, like, less full and a bit weaker. Your mood gets really cranky. And it doesn't speed fat loss.
Right.
You know, when your body feels like it has what it needs all the time, it can feel more and more comfortable losing fat. Because if you want to talk about the famine thing?
No, you go ahead and just do the famine thing. And then
so
I'll
in starvation mode, when you're not eating enough and your body knows that, it's going to preserve whatever fat that it can because it's afraid that it's going to die and it needs energy in case it doesn't get to eat at all anymore.
Its goal is not to die.
Right. So if it's always got this like steady supply of energy available from your diet, it can just kind of let go of fat. It's like, oh, what do we need that for? There's always food. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Good.
So eat more often, you know, maybe smaller portions. But, you know, something they always say, and it's hard for people who overeat, I know, but eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. So maybe slow down and, you know, think, okay, I can have more if I'm still hungry, but give it 20 minutes. I've had enough, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, here's another thing that people need to keep in mind, too, is that if your body can't process the types of foods that you're eating, you are going to be hungry, yeah, even though you ate a lot. You'll be hungry an hour later. So one thing we know about Amber from other questions that she's asked is that she's been having some gallbladder trouble. So we know her bile is not flowing very well, which means she can't emulsify fats that she's eating that the body needs. So if she's not emulsifying fats correctly, then the body's going to be screaming for more fats. It needs those fats, and you're gonna have a hard time feeling satiated. You'll probably be hungry a lot more often, as to where if bile is moving and then you consume more fats that your body needs, then you feel satiated a lot longer, and you'll also teach your body how to burn fat more effectively, so that between meals your body can shift to burning stored fat, and then you don't have to eat so often.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. Adam from Parrish, Florida. Did you see the great debate set to take place in London between Gary Taubes and Alan Aragon? They are going to debate calories versus low carb.
I did not know that they were doing that, but I choose Gary Taubes. I choose him as the winner.
As the low carb guy?
Well, he has the book Good Calories, Bad Calories. And he's one of the first people who really put the message out there that, you know, it's not about the calories. There's all this other stuff that matters.
They're not all created equal.
Gotcha.
Right. And where a lot of the confusion can come from is that look at a person who does have a lot of that stuff going on correctly. You know, they're digesting everything they eat. They're eating real food. You know, all that stuff is in line and functioning. Now, if they adjust the amount of food that they're eating, then that can be very effective for them. So when people count calories like that and they have results, it confuses everybody, thinking that it should work for every human just because it worked
but
for
like
one.
Your book says, all diets are not right for every person, and it has to go by every person's imbalances, how their digestion's working. Everybody's different.
Right. There's too many factors to make it a simple formula. And I know that people want there to be a simple formula or a magic pill, but when you can realize, okay, that's never going to happen ever, not even one time ever, then you can be disappointed for a minute, and then you can realize, okay, now that I accept that that's never going to happen ever, not one time even ever.
Ever.
Now you can say, okay, now what can I do? And then doing the work to find the answers for you becomes a little easier because you're not looking for the jackpot.
Yeah, well, I took a magic pill a little bit ago, and now it's just not kicking in.
It's just kicking in now.
There are magic pills out there, but they don't make you lose weight.
No,
or, well, I mean, you can lose weight, but then you gain it back really fast when you get off the magic pill. All right, Adam from Parrish, Florida. Oh, it's Adam again. Hey.
Hello.
I'm getting so sick of this question when it comes to the health and fitness world. You can't get an answer other than you need to burn more than you consume. It's simple science. My problem is the laws of thermodynamics don't work in the body. There is energy converted in the body, true, but there is also hormonal responses to food that cause fat storage, no matter what the caloric intake is. So I don't think that a calorie is a calorie. 2,000 calories of Skittles can't be the same as 2,000 calories of chicken. So where does the calories in versus calories out argument really work?
It works in fiction. So if you're writing a fiction novel, you could use the calories in, calories out formula in that story, and people would be like, okay, that makes sense because this is fiction. But Adam said that I agree with what he's saying, totally. As a matter of fact, let's Nina, just edit the whole show down to what Adam said.
Yeah, we'll just make him a healthcare practitioner.
Done.
We'll be done.
He sounds like he might be something.
I don't know. I can't remember.
All right. Tom from Concord, North Carolina. I never counted calories, only carbs and cholesterol, and lost 25 pounds.
Good job, Tom. So let's give Tom more good news.
You don't have to count cholesterol either.
Right. You can put them back in, probably.
He might be excited to hear that.
Awesome. There goes the butter. Yeah, and again, like, even though that worked for him, like, typically, once your body's balanced to low-carb approach, can be helpful because it keeps your insulin levels down, it's still not appropriate for everybody.
It really won't work for everybody.
Yeah, and if he's doing that carb thing, like the back cholesterol loading. Is basically carbs, basically, right?
Look at Ken and knowing stuff and teaching Will things.
But Will, don't you know
that cholesterol is carbs?
Edit that out. Beep. Beep. Well, I mean, cholesterol is caused from the sugar in our food.
Oh,
not
you
cholesterol
mean,
in the food. So if he's watching his carbs, there it is. He doesn't
yes.
even have to worry.
I thought you meant eating cholesterol was the same as eating carbs.
No. Eating carbs causes cholesterol.
So let's break some things down for Tom here. So, you know, one of the most effective things that it does reach the widest number of people that want to drop fat is to by reducing carb intake, because if you can reduce carb intake and bring your insulin levels down, at least your body is in a position where it has the ability to burn fat. That doesn't mean it's going to, and that doesn't mean that you can sustain a low carb diet. A lot of people can't for many reasons, but at least it sets a person up. So that's one reason that Tom could have had a lot of success there. But when you're looking at cholesterol, cholesterol does not come from the cholesterol that we consume. Our body makes 85% of the cholesterol in our body, and we have a whole episode on cholesterol. You should probably listen to that to understand. But dropping your carbs, for most people, will drop their cholesterol levels as well. So you might be able to find that you can add cholesterol back in and have whole eggs and meat and all that kind of stuff that's delicious, and your cholesterol won't go back up as long as you are keeping the carbs down. And if that worked for you before.
I found that I've lost weight when I tamped down my demons.
When you
tamped down my
exorcisms
demons.
Work for
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, yes. Right.
So, Tom, try that. I would try that, Tom. Try the thing with the demons.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Amy from Allen, Texas. Are negative calorie foods for real? And she has negative calorie in quotes.
Mm.
So we can do air quotes for those?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would look at, again, it really depends on the person and how these negative calories, like I've seen some energy drinks that say like clinically proven to burn like 100 more calories just when you drink it, you know? Mm-hmm. And most of these are stimulants, whether they're caffeinated or B vitamins or different amino acids that are supposed to speed your metabolism. And for some people, that pushes their chemistry in the very wrong direction. Like if you're already, say, burning through carbohydrates too quickly, if you're a fast oxidizer, which a lot of people are, that can push you further into that imbalance and create more problems of like the high and low blood sugars and binge eating and messing with your digestion and your ability to make the digestive juices. So you want to really look at the person and how those particular nutrients are going to affect that particular person's metabolism. And even, what would you say about like the lower starch vegetables, like celery, they usually say is like a negative calorie food?
So here's the answer. Like, I think, in my opinion, is that the answer is yes, but that doesn't mean that that's going to help you lose weight. And here's why. You know, people don't understand the amount of resources that it takes for the body to digest. It's a big job. And when it's time to digest, the body will shut down a lot of stuff going on so that it can focus on doing that. That's why a puppy will go and take a nap after it eats. It's a great idea. But it takes a lot of resources. So there's a number of resources in a stick of celery. And it's true that to break that celery down probably takes more resources than are in that celery. So that would equate it as a negative calorie food type situation. But in order to get enough negative calories, if you're believing that this calorie out thing is true anyways, let's just pretend that we do, which we don't. If you just tune in, you missed all the funny stuff Kenneth said before.
Yeah.
If you just tuned in.
I can say it again.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. But, you know, the number of calorie sticks that you would need to eat to create this deficit of fuel to be bring you any type of benefit, by the time you got there, you would have eaten so much food that just that level of food would spike your insulin and like you ate a candy bar.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of becomes worthless in that regard. But when you look at most of the negative calorie foods like celery or a lime or cabbage, you know, a lot of them are just, they have a good amount of fiber, not a whole lot of nutrients, but they're just good foods to eat to help your body push junk out. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that we talked about we didn't even mention in this whole calorie in, calorie out formula is the person pooping?
Mm.
Can they even, do they poop once a week? You know, because that's a problem. You're not getting rid of waste, and a lot of that junk is going to get stored in fat cells. So a lot of these negative calorie foods just happen to be good choices to eat anyways. So why not just eat them?
Yeah, and for the fiber aspect, but also like trace minerals that are in there, as well as like the sensation of feeling like, or feeling full and being like, oh, I had a big meal. It was like, you know, my 4 or 5 ounces of whatever meat, protein, chicken, or whatever it is. And then, like you said, that full hand size worth of vegetables, it's a lot more satiating than if you just had like a couple eggs and
100 calorie snack pack.
Yeah, and you sit there like, now what? So it can also help with that sensation of feeling full, which could help you not eat other foods that will mess up your metabolism. And there's a lot of great minerals in those vegetables. So,
right. Yeah, like a hard-boiled egg over one of those 100-calorie pretzel things, you're going to be way more, you know, full over a hard-boiled egg.
I thought you meant taking an egg and sticking it on top of a pretzel.
Yeah, that's what
I
thought you were saying.
I've never seen that.
That?
Yeah.
One thing that, you know, another problem here that counting calories as your solution is bad is that when you're doing this, you hate math, first of all, because your whole day is dictated on math. And
you
it's
have
like,
to remember that number.
Oh, I only have this many left, and I'm so hungry and ornery already. But it just makes you a miserable human all day long to stay within those restrictions. Whereas if you're eating real food and you're digesting it and you're giving your body what it needs, all of a sudden you find that, oh my gosh, I forgot to eat. You know, I just got busy. I totally forgot to eat because your body has everything it needs. So when you're looking at these 100-calorie snack packs and you're using this as your formula, you're eating these foods that your body doesn't view as food, or it's spiking insulin and creating this horrible sugar crash so that you're famished an hour later. And then you're starving again. You need to eat more food, which means you need more calories and you're going over your number and you lost.
Hmm.
You know, a while ago, you mentioned about, you know, a dog will go lay down after it eats and stuff. And then I started thinking about, you know, how you're not supposed to swim for 30 minutes after you eat. I mean, would that be a good idea for somebody to just lay down for like 20 or 30 minutes every time after a meal and just like just rest for a second and then get up and be okay? Let your body like have that time to digest?
If they had poor level of resources, it could be one more thing they could do to move things in their direction. But we kind of have teach people how to lift your resources so you can be a whole human being and your body can function as you go through your day instead of you dictating your day to allow your body to function correctly.
Tony, so, I need to lay down for 30 minutes. I just had some chicken. She wants a nap. Sorry. Yeah. I'll just be in your bed.
Uh-huh. You can kind of look at it like if like working out also, saying digestion takes a lot of energy and a workout takes a lot of energy. If you're kind of low blood pressure and low resources, and you start to work out, you're going to get lightheaded. You're going to want to like lay down or put your head down or something. Mm-hmm. Same thing with digestion. If you don't have a lot of good resources to digest your food and keep blood flowing to your head, then you may want to like take a little rest. But as you said, the more nourished you get, the less you'll need to do that. And also, the better you eat for your body, the less tired you'll get after your meal. Like, it shouldn't necessarily knock you out to have to digest something. But if you really spiked your insulin levels, for example, if you had a lot of carbs or something like that.
Yeah, that's when I get tired, is if I eat that.
Yeah, you'll get super sleepy.
A lot of sugar.
And it's all just going with your blood sugar roller coaster.
Right.
But when I eat the way that I'm supposed to, then I have tons of energy and I feel good and I feel great. And it doesn't, like, I don't crash.
Yeah.
Oh.
So oh, was that a positive ad for you? Oh, gosh. Cynthia from Grand Rapids, Michigan. What is a carb for your program? How is it different from what nutritionists teach? What carbs can be used when a person gets canine hunger? Same question for when blood sugar dives. Hypoglycemia? Also, what are good carbs for a diabetic before bedtime, assuming there are any? Is it good to go to bed hungry if diabetic? She's got a lot of questions there. Wow.
So I think she just covered like the whole book and all of our courses.
All in one.
Yeah, all in one. So first of all, we don't have a good carb for what we do. If we're saying we have a program, which we kind of don't. We kind of have people figure out what's right for themselves. So, you know, one thing to understand is that it's great when you can reduce the amount of carbs, especially starches that are going to spike insulin. That really accelerates fat loss if that's your goal. But if someone has low resources and low minerals, and if they try to cut out all those carbs, they're going to crash and they're going to be miserable and they're going to be ornery and they're going to beat people up and snap and be depressed and all these things, which we talk about in almost all of our other episodes. So just listen to all of the other episodes for that one. But beyond that, it's great that if someone needs carbs, if they use carbs like sweet potatoes, yams, berries, things that include a lot of carbohydrates in them, but they're not so high that they spike insulin as high as like bread or pasta or rice and things like that might. So that's one step that a person can take, and that can be a beneficial carb if you're looking for something like that. But again, you really need to look at your physiology to figure out, you know, how many carbs do I need? Can I exist on less carbs? And in order to exist on less carbs, your body needs to be able to process proteins and fats correctly, because when you reduce one food, you got to increase another kind.
Mm-hmm. Then you got to look at like what is your sort of metabolic tendency at the moment. Are you leaning to be more of someone who burns through carbohydrates really quickly, what we call a fast oxidizer, or more diabetic and a slow oxidizer? Because that would also dictate like what kind of carbs would work best for you. If you're a fast oxidizer, you would want slower burning carbs like oatmeals and more dense grains and very low glycemic index fruits. Whereas if you're more of a slower oxidizer, you'd want to really monitor the amount of carbs that you're eating and do what you can to monitor the number of active carbs that you're consuming, which we haven't really talked about yet.
Yeah, I don't think we have. Yeah. It's easy to figure out. It's just a formula.
Sure, you just take the amount of carbs in the food and subtract the amount of fiber from it, and that's how many active carbs you get. So if you have like 20 total carbohydrates on the label and 5 of those carbohydrates are fiber, then you're left with 15 active carbs
for a serving. Usually there's like 12 servings in a package, and you're looking at the package like it's one serving.
Yeah.
So do you do the math correctly there? So let's bulk a couple of these things together that she's asking, like for when blood sugar dives, hypoglycemia, and canine hunger. A lot of those are usually all the same scenario. People get ravenous when blood sugar hits the ground hard, when it goes down low, especially when mineral levels are also low.
Mm.
So in a situation like that, if a person's experiencing that, like hypoglycemia, if they can lift their mineral levels, that can buffer the sugars when they go low. And Will, do you want to explain a little bit why blood sugar would go so extremely low?
Yeah. Well, if your body is like a fast oxidizer and you burn through carbohydrates really quickly, that's usually because your body's not able to make blood sugar out of proteins and fats well. If it did, it would just tap into those stored fuel sources of proteins and fats and use that to create blood sugar, which would help keep your blood sugar and blood pressure levels more stable. And that also relates to better electrolyte levels, because when your blood sugar levels are really stable, that sugar can help hold electrolytes in suspension in the bloodstream. So that too contributes to keeping adequate blood pressure. And your body will really freak out when your blood pressure gets too low, because you can get a seizure or stroke.
Right. So look at what you're eating too, because that counts when you're looking at blood sugar crashes. Because if you eat something with starches or high carbohydrates and your insulin is very powerful, when you spike your blood sugar that high, all this insulin comes out, but if your insulin is overpowerful, it drives too much sugar out too quickly and you crash hard. So if you're someone with that type of physiology, which we teach people how to look at their physiology and figure that out, but if you're like that, then if you reduce the types of carbs that you're eating to these more medium carb foods that don't spike it as hard, your blood sugar doesn't go as high, so your body doesn't call on as much insulin, which drives it down to the ground too fast. So now you kind of keep these even blood sugar levels and you don't have these spikes and crashes. Now for the diabetic thing, as far as carbs for diabetics, if you're a type 2 diabetic, you're diabetic because your blood sugar is high, and your blood sugar is high because your body can't process the carbohydrates that you're consuming, so those blood sugars accumulate in the blood and your sugar goes high. So don't. You don't have any business eating that many carbohydrates when you're a type 2 diabetic. I know people have told you that everybody needs carbs. I know that when you left the doctor's office, the doctor never mentioned diet at all. He just gave you these drugs and told you to come see him in a couple months. But the food that you're eating is affecting your blood sugar. So by removing those carbohydrates, and especially the starches, you can allow your cells to become more receptive to insulin, since insulin won't be screaming at your cells all day nonstop. Now, you'll have to take steps in order to reduce those carbs, because most people are eating those many carbs because they can't process other foods correctly, and they find that that's the only thing they can get any energy. But after pushing that too long, eventually the cells stop listening. So take one of our courses, like the 12-week fat loss course, or read Kick Your Fat in the Nuts, and understand how to get your body to a position where it can process those fats and those proteins. So then you'll qualify to reduce those carbs without going insane.
Yeah, and it may take a little while. Like, while your body learns to run off of proteins and fats more as you work on your digestion, the cells have to sort of relearn how to respond to sugars.
Yeah, it's not going to be a two-week thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be a year.
And you'll probably feel worse at first. You'll probably have less energy than initially because you're not going to the quick sugar fix to create energy for yourself. And you have to recondition your cells by exposing them to much lower levels of carbohydrates for an extended period of time. And that's how you restore insulin sensitivity.
Right. And if you have digestive issues, fixing those will speed all that process up a lot.
Yeah.
Because it'll allow you to eat more real food and less processed sugars. Mm. And show.
All right. So today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for all the details.
So let's add one more action plan. What we learned to do it to figure out, you know, calories and such. Step one would be to just stop it. Stop counting calories because you're wasting time on something that could go towards something that would be effective. And the next important thing is to look at your body to figure out what type of foods you're processing better, because the amount of food that you eat will be dictated by what your body needs. So if you're giving your body food that it can't process, your body's going to say, can you give me some more food, please? And that's going to restrict your ability to, you know, reduce the amount of food that you're eating, or to put your body in that happy place where it can access stored fat and burn it for fuel. So more importantly than, you know, the amount of food that you're eating is the types of foods that you're eating. So start looking at that, figure out what your body can process, and start working with your body instead of working with math.
Yeah. Want to add my 2 cents?
Yeah.
Summary?
2 cents.
So when you look at like calories, it's really important to know, like, any kind of food that you can't digest can potentially make you fat, whether it's like free range eggs or
right.
coconut oil or Reese's Pieces, whatever it is. If you can't digest it, it can make you fat. So when that, and you think about, well, what about calories? Like, well, it doesn't matter if you can't digest that particular kind of food, it's going to give you problems. So you want to start by focusing on your digestion and making sure your body can handle all the different kinds of nutrients that it needs. And then learn to look at your own chemistry. And we teach you how to do that in our free digestion course at kickinthenuts.com, because that will help you understand what kinds of foods to choose to suit your body chemistry. And then when you do that, your body will naturally come into balance and not need to hang on to so much body fat for all the different reasons that it would hold on to excess adipose tissue, which goes far beyond calories in, calories out, and a lot of other factors.
Yeah, so if you heard something that was helpful, go to iTunes and leave us a review. We really appreciate everyone who's been subscribing and leaving us reviews. You've been moving us up the charts, and we've been hanging around top 20 a lot lately, so we really appreciate what you're doing there. So keep it up.
All right. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Also, swing on over to willsmybodyofknowledge.net and check out all his great stuff he has on there. And then join our Facebook club at Kick It in the Nuts. And that's where we're going to be posting all our topics for future shows. And we'll be weighing in on them next week.
Well, then bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Where the sun is on.